Today is Tuesday, May 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up,
it'll affect U.S. businesses two different ways.
That's Sherman Robinson, an international economics analyst, on the impact of the latest U.S. tariff increase on Chinese exports. Also ahead, Iran tensions are on the agenda as the U.S. meets with Russia in Sochi. And U.S. authorities arrest 50 people in an alleged marriage fraud scheme aimed at circumventing immigration laws. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump said the United States can make a deal with China tomorrow to resolve the trade dispute between the world's two largest economies, adding the accusation that China prevented the two sides from completing an agreement. In a series of tweets today, Trump portrayed the United States as being in a much better position now than any deal we could have made. He restated his frequent refrain that under his administration, other countries will not take advantage of the United States when it comes to trade. His latest remarks came after he boosted taxes on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods sent to the U.S. and moved to impose duties on another $300 billion of Chinese exports. China retaliated by imposing tariffs on $60 billion worth of U.S. goods. Sherman Robinson is a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He explained how the U.S. trade war will impact businesses worldwide.
It'll affect U.S. businesses two different ways. First, a lot of the imports from China are part of supply chains for U.S. businesses. So we're importing parts from China, many of them produced by either U.S. affiliates or U.S. entities are working in China, as well as with Chinese firms. And these are parts that go into manufacturing in the U.S., Apple iPhones, for example, various computer parts, things like that, plus some value chains in autos and parts. Second, this round of tariffs is being imposed on consumer goods imported from China. And that's going to have a direct effect on consumers in the U.S. That will just raise prices, and you're already seeing Walmart and others planning to pass those tariffs on to consumers in the U.S. And it's a wide, wide range of consumer goods that we buy, textiles, all kinds of manufacturing. That will have a direct impact on consumers. The previous ones were more indirect. They were hitting producers in the U.S. from intermediate inputs.
Also, some members of Congress have said that this is what needs to be done to fight this type of, I guess you want to call it a fight with China. But some are saying that maybe this is not the way to do it. What else should President Trump have done?
Well, the problem is that the issues with China are much more than just with the U.S. The issues of intellectual property theft that concern us, the issues of state-owned enterprises which are being subsidized in their trade, these are international concerns that affect all Chinese trading partners, especially in the EU and elsewhere in Asia. To do this unilaterally makes little sense. These discussions with China should be done preferably under the WTO rubric or certainly with an international consortium of countries, not in a bilateral trade fight. So in that sense, this is the U.S. trying to do something bilaterally that affects all other trading partners with China. So it would be much better to do this in some multilateral arena rather than try to do it bilaterally.
And as far as businesses go, will they be forced to do more business in other countries?
Yes, of course. The very rapid impact of this will be to shift value chains away from the U.S. and China to get suppliers from elsewhere. You will start seeing that. Firms may prefer to locate closer to the other suppliers than being importing the parts. So you might actually have firms move their production out of the U.S. altogether and to elsewhere. We will certainly start to see a restructuring of global production and trade if the U.S. continues on this very strong protectionist policies that it's pursuing.
Would this be good for other countries if we did this?
Yes. I mean, you'll get trade diversion. If the U.S. has a trade war with China, other countries that don't participate in these trade wars will get the diverted trade, the trade diversion. You're already seeing some of that. So you may well see U.S. producers, instead of producing in China, they may move to Thailand. They won't necessarily move back to the U.S.
Also, China is saying it is not going to give in to foreign pressure. So where do you see this going at this time?
Well, I think China has expressed commitment to the world trading system and the World Trade Organization. All of this has been initiated by the U.S. outside of the rules of the World Trade Organization. So they are operating outside of that. And China has expressed interest and continued interest in strengthening the global system. So they are open, I think, to a multipolar discussion with a number of countries. They're clearly not happy at all being pressured in a bilateral trade disagreement.
That was Sherman Robinson, a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He spoke with me from Washington. Well, Iran is on the agenda today as U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov in Sochi, Russia. Lavrov said he expected a sincere conversation with Pompeo, including trying to find out how the Trump administration planned to resolve tensions with Iran, which Lavrov said the U.S. created on its own. Ahead of the meeting, State Department's Special Representative for Iran, Brian Hook, told reporters Iran plays a destabilizing role in Syria and that Iran using Syria as a missile platform to advance its foreign policy objectives goes against Russian goals of bringing stability to Syria. Today's Sochi meeting comes after Pompeo shared intelligence and details with European allies about what the U.S. calls Iran's recent escalating threat, blaming Tehran for failing to choose talks over threats. Among the top stories in the world, the UN urges nations to cut off all ties with Myanmar's military as part of its efforts to hold it accountable for human rights abuses against the Rohingya Muslim minority. Police in Somalia say four people were killed today when a suicide bomber hit offices in the Warta Nabata district of Mogadishu. And UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is pledging the world body will lead efforts to combat online hate speech in the aftermath of the deadly New Zealand mosque shootings. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. A new study says 12 African nations have adopted laws or policies to restrict non-governmental organizations such as aid groups or human rights organizations. Most of the countries with such laws are in East Africa, such as Rwanda and Burundi, and North Africa, such as Algeria and Egypt. The study by the Freedom House organization in Washington says the laws often are intended to bolster state control over civil society and prevent challenges to the government. The report says that in countries with restrictive laws, civil society groups should work with the courts and legislatures to persuade them to drop the laws. Groups also should deepen their roots in local communities to counter what Freedom House calls pernicious accusations that they are foreign agents. Freedom House urges governments in other countries to raise concerns about the restrictions and encourage African states to abandon the laws. Well, U.S. authorities say they have arrested 50 people in connection with what prosecutors are calling a large-scale marriage fraud scheme aimed at circumventing immigration laws. According to a grand jury indictment filed last week, the scheme operated out of the southern state of Texas and includes people there and in Vietnam. The court filings lay out an arrangement in which those wanting to gain permanent resident status in the U.S. paid between $50,000 and $70,000 to an organization led by Ashley Ian Yugen. Those people would then be matched with a U.S. citizen recruited by the organization who would be given a cut of the payment and, in some cases, would go to recruit other citizens to take part in the scheme as well. To make their immigration application seem legitimate, authorities say the organization helped those involved create albums of wedding pictures and provided fake documents relating to taxes, utility accounts, and employment records. The indictment includes a range of charges against 96 people, including marriage fraud, mail fraud, immigration fraud, lying under oath, and witness tampering. This is VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, as Malawi gears up for elections on May 21st, candidates and voters say flooding from Cyclone Idai is negatively impacting the vote. Uncertainty at the polls on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Host Carol Castiel interviews Nancy Lindborg, president of the United States Institute of Peace, to discuss USIP's mission, research regarding a strategy to prevent the spread of extremism around the world, and the vital role of women in the successful conflict resolution negotiations. Listen this Saturday and Sunday to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.
Dementia is a rapidly growing public health problem everywhere in the world. 50 million people suffer from dementia, and in the next 30 years, that number is expected to triple. Researchers are looking for ways to treat or prevent dementia. VOA's Carol Pearson tells us about a promising clinical trial underway in the U.S.
Regular exercise, a healthy diet, maintaining healthy blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar levels help stave off dementia as we grow older. Dementia is not a normal part of aging, but age is a huge risk factor. As people around the world live longer, health agencies and researchers are looking for ways to prevent, stop, or treat dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, one of the most common types of dementia. David Shore is about to undergo a new procedure that could treat early-stage Alzheimer's. He's with his doctor, Vipor Krishna, a neurosurgeon at Ohio State Wexner Medical Center.
Let's do it.
The procedure Shore is about to have involves sound waves. Ultrasound waves target and open the blood-brain barrier, a protective layer that shields the brain from infections. But Krishna says the barrier also makes it hard to treat neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's.
Opening the blood-brain barrier allows us to access more of the brain tissue and be able to increase the effectiveness or bioavailability of the therapeutics.
Shore and his wife Kim were willing to try any new treatment that might help with his dementia. Kim describes the couple's reaction when they received a phone call inviting Shore to participate in a clinical trial.
There's this trial, would you be interested? And without really knowing what it was, we said sure.
Shore became one of 10 patients enrolled in the study. The trial tests MRI-guided imaging to target the part of the brain responsible for memory and cognition. Krishna explains that's where Alzheimer's patients have a buildup of toxic proteins called amyloid.
Higher deposition of amyloid goes hand in hand with loss of function in Alzheimer's disease.
Krishna says this procedure might allow a patient's own immune system to clear some of the amyloid. In the procedure, ultrasound wave pulses cause microscopic bubbles to expand and contract in the brain.
The increase and decrease in size of these microbubbles mechanically opens the blood-brain barrier.
The patient is awake during the procedure.
First treatment, David. Here we go.
This area has high amyloid. So we'll be opening this area.
Opening the barrier may one day allow doctors to deliver medication straight to the site of the disease. Kim Shore realizes her husband might not benefit from this treatment.
We're hopeful that it can help him, but we also know maybe it'll help somebody else.
Shore was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at age 56. He's glad to be part of a study that could help others who are in the early stages of Alzheimer's, even if it doesn't help him. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Well, WhatsApp, the popular phone and text messaging tool, today urged users to update their phones with the latest version of its software to protect against possible spyware attacks. The company says the spyware, which allows others to monitor calls using the service, appears to have come from a private company. WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook, says it has referred the matter to the U.S. Department of Justice. The rights group Amnesty International says the spyware was apparently developed by an Israeli company called the NSO Group. The spyware could be loaded on cell phones via a phone call. The spyware allegedly was used against Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was murdered last year in Saudi Arabia's embassy in Turkey. Amnesty International and other people who say they were infected by the spyware are suing the NSO Group in Israeli courts. The company denies the allegations. Well, history has been made in Australia as a politician in the Northern Territory spoke an Aboriginal language with an interpreter for the first time in Parliament. The fight to use Indigenous languages in the chamber has lasted for years. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Independent MP Yinia Mark Goyala addressed his parliamentary colleagues in his Aboriginal language that's spoken in parts of Arnhem Land in Australia's Northern Territory.
I acknowledge the Indigenous Language and Culture Program.
Through an interpreter, he delivered a blistering speech about the lack of bilingual education in remote Indigenous areas.
We need to provide pathways that allow for success.
The Northern Territory has more than 100 First Nation languages and dialects. In the past, politicians were told to speak only English in Parliament and that it would be disorderly if they didn't. It was then decided that lawmakers could use a language other than English, only if they provided a written translation in advance. Those rules were scrapped in March after concerted pressure from Indigenous politicians. Goyala says it's a breakthrough.
It's taken a long time. It wasn't allowed in the beginning of the term, but I pushed and pushed, and finally, just this year, it's been approved. I feel real confident doing it in my language.
It's estimated 250 Aboriginal languages were spoken in Australia before European settlement in 1788. Of the 145 still in use today, more than 100 are considered to be critically endangered. Indigenous languages are not just a means of communication. They express knowledge of all aspects of society, from history and family relationships to astronomy, biology, and food. Each language is associated with an area of land and has a deep spiritual importance. After decades of debate, university researchers believe that all Indigenous languages in Australia are descended from one common language. The United Nations General Assembly declared that 2019 would be the International Year of Indigenous Languages. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Thank you, Phil. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump welcomed ambassadors and diplomats from Muslim-majority nations to the White House yesterday for an iftar dinner marking the end of the day's fasting observed by Muslims during the holy month of Ramadan. Trump highlighted Ramadan as a time of charity and bonding of families and communities. Trump also spoke of overcoming the bigotry and violence impacting people of different faiths in recent weeks.
Our hearts are filled with the grief for Muslims who were killed in their mosques in New Zealand, as well as the Christians, Jews, and other children of God who were slain in Sri Lanka, California, and Pittsburgh. In their blessed memory, we resolve to defeat the evils of terrorism and religious persecution so that all people can worship without fear, pray without danger, and live by the faith that flows from their heart.
Trump also called for prayer for a future of harmony and peace. Well, music has long helped people express their emotions and connect with one another. Over the years, medical studies have proven that music has many health benefits as well. They range from facilitating regular breathing and lifting a person's mood to improving emotional functioning and motor control in patients. Faith Lapidus narrates.
Katie Hernandez has two sons. Her oldest, Lucas, is 3 years old.
He is autistic, and he has a lot of sensory processing sensitivities, which means he's really sensitive to loud noises, bright lights, a lot of busy around his body, and he really likes to jump and swing and climb and anything active.
Earlier this year, Lucas started one-on-one music therapy sessions to increase his attention span.
Hey, 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 I got a question for you today.
Music therapist Dixie Mazur visits him once a week.
I brought in piano today because I've found that piano can be a great tool to work with anybody. It provides a lot of independence. I brought in drums because drums are a great way to engage with others and to use as like a redirection tool.
Mr. Golden Sun, please shine down on me.
Lucas's mother is happy with the results so far.
It's been really helpful. Miss Dixie's come up with a few songs to help him with social dialogue. So it helps him communicate with us a lot more when we can't figure out exactly what he needs.
Gerard has a cat on his head.
Music therapy can also be used in a group setting.
Good job, Gerard. Let's see. Can you pass the cat to Patrick?
Zoe Gleason-Bowles brings music therapy to a group of people with a range of disabilities.
As a group, they don't really engage with each other, so a lot of my work is trying to slowly get them to positively engage with their fellow group members, as well as actively engage with me.
She says the instruments stimulate patients' senses and muscles.
We can work with atypical individuals, helping with stress management and self-care, all the way up to individuals who are paraplegic and aren't able to move their limbs or have extreme cognitive delays. If you've seen brain scans of people listening to music versus not, when you're listening to music, your entire brain is lit up because it's having the music and the intellectual sides both kind of firing all at once. Whereas if you're just talking to somebody, you're probably more into one hemisphere of the brain rather than both.
Julie is here and it's time to say,
oh.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, Chrissy, I can't say hello to you until you're in a seat.
Music therapist Kelsey Yingling is founder and owner of Neurosound Music Therapy, which operates in Northern Virginia.
For a music therapist, we have to go through 4 years of undergraduate training and a 6-month internship, that's 1,000 hours. And following that, we sit for a board certification exam to become board certified.
A music therapist should be patient and able to adapt to various situations.
It's a lot of work, so at the end of the day, it's exhausting, but I love music and the fact that I get to use music to help other individuals achieve their goals and their highest potential is really one of the most rewarding things I could be doing with my life.
Yingling says there are over 6,000 board-certified music therapists in the United States. She hopes more skillful therapists become certified so more patients can get the help they need. For writer Faiza El-Masri in Chantilly, Virginia, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Justin Thwaites. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Nikki Strong. You love music?
How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA1, the voice of America.